Hello, and welcome to the Novel Traveller podcast. My name is Michelle Walsh Jackson, and I'm the Novel Traveller. So, are you dreaming of adventure and going on a bucket list trip anytime soon? Well, it may not look like it this year, but this week's podcast will certainly help you to prepare for that. And lots of people are looking at travelling in 2022. My guest this week is radio and TV presenter Ruth Scott. She has certainly been on some novel trips over the years, and we have some great chats about her climbing of Kilimanjaro and some other far-flung places. Earlier this week, I had an email from a listener looking for help and advice on booking a safari in 2022. So I caught up with Kira Foley of Platinum Travel to find out what the travel industry is doing to prepare for the opening up of travel again. So be sure to listen in to hear about her free inline inspiration evenings that are coming up over the next 2 weeks. But for now, sit back and enjoy this week's Novel Travel. Well, with me today is radio and TV presenter Ruth Scott. And thanks very much for joining me, Ruth.
Listen, this is the most exciting thing to happen to me since COVID flipping started. So it is my absolute pleasure to get to talk to you, Michelle.
Isn't it lovely to talk about something nicer? Well, we always do talk about travel on the Elaine show, don't we? You know, when you're presenting it. So, you know, it's lovely to find out what you like and what your preferences and what you've done.
Yeah, and I've almost nearly forgotten at this stage what I like and what my preferences are. But I'm looking forward to those days coming back again.
Oh, yeah, and they will indeed. So yeah. I'm going to start off with a quick fire round, if that's okay with you, just to get an idea of what you really like. So say you're heading off to the takeaway. Would you go for Chinese or Indian?
Indian.
And if you're going to travel, would you prefer boat or train?
Oh, I like train. I sort of feel a bit of the... what's that fancy train that
The Orient Express, romance of the train.
I'm not flagging Irish Rail, but it's no Orient Express, but I do enjoy a train journey.
And I do think a train journeys are going to be big when we do start to travel again. I think people are going to want to go on epic train journeys like through Canada. So vineyards or distillery?
Vineyards, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's lovely because you get a kind of a feel for the place, don't you, as well?
Yeah, no, I'd have to argue with my husband over this because he would probably prefer a distillery. In fact, he'd prefer a brewery.
So,
option. You can add that in. We live in Inchcore and there's a brewery here now, a beer brewery and a gin distillery. Oh my God, it's like I'm on my holidays all the time in Inchcore.
Just open the door and you can smell it. So would you opt more for luxury or adventure?
I think somewhere in the middle. I get a bit bored with luxury. That sounds terribly notion-y, but I like adventure. I like heading off, even if I'm just walking down the local street, looking in the local supermarket to see what kind of crazy stuff they sell. I do like a little bit of adventure. I think I'm probably a bit scabby to be going for luxury.
but luxurious adventure is good too. e-book or paperback?
Paperback. And then bring it back to the charity shop. It's funny you mentioned because any time in the past we've gone on holidays, we always go down to the charity shop and get a load of books to bring away with us. I'm a bit of don't use the word freak, but I do like the idea of reusing and recycling. And there's loads of great books that I haven't read that are in the charity shop.
Would you leave them behind you when you're on your travels, if you're in the hotel or that? Would you leave them?
Yeah, if it's a hotel that has bookshelves there, I've done it so many times. I've absolutely devoured my books and then swapped for their books and then left them all there.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great thing to do. Any hotels that do that, they're very popular with me, I have to say.
Yeah.
Beach or mountain?
Don't make me choose. I like a bit of both. I do like the beach. When it's really hot weather, I do like the beach because it is a nice breeze to cool you down.
Yeah. And it's a bit cooler on the mountain too, isn't it? I think you're a bit like me, Ruth. I think you like everything.
Look, to be honest, I got outside my 5K today in the middle of lockdown to go to the dentist. And that was quite an adventure. Genuinely. The dentist was probably wondering, why is Ruth so grinning so inanely coming to visit the dentist?
Did you dress up?
No, I, alas, I did not. But, you know, it's exciting to go anywhere these days. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Would you prefer a caravan or a tent?
Caravan. Caravan. Stayed in caravan on family holidays years ago. I'm one of 8 kids. And I just remember a lot of us in a caravan. And not one of your fancy mobile homes now. This is like the caravan that Graham Norton was dancing in that episode of Father Ted.
Yeah, hitched up on the back of the Volkswagen or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. And I suppose this is kind of a worky one, jazz or rock?
Oh my God, I think jazz is the music of Satan. I just hate jazz. So I like rock, yeah. You know, I've always 7 older brothers and sisters. There was always music in the house when I was a kid. So I was exposed to the likes of Elvis and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin when I was 3 and 4 years old. So I've always held them very near and dear to my heart.
Are you the baby?
Yeah, the baby. Hell of a baby, as my mother used to say.
And now this is food for thought for that. I don't know if you've ever done a Camino, but would you rather do a Camino or a cycle as a holiday?
It's funny, I climbed Kilimanjaro about 10 years ago. So I kind of compare that to a Camino, I guess. And I wouldn't recommend it to my enemy. So I would say cycle.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Did you not enjoy it? What was it, the altitude?
Do you know what it was? We were hooshed up the mountain too quickly. And you need time to adjust to the altitude. This isn't just like climbing up the Sugarloaf. And this isn't even like climbing Carn Tuathail. The oxygen, your lungs actually feel deprived all the time you're up there. And so we did this. My sleeping bag wasn't warm enough for, like, this is not like my diamond shoes are too tight for my feet. This is like the temperatures were about minus 10, minus 15 at night. And my sleeping bag, not my fault, by the way, you go through a company and it's all organized for you. It wasn't warm enough. So you were awake at night with the cold, the altitude sickness. It was hideous.
But you made it to the top.
I did. And do you know what I did when I reached the top of Kilimanjaro? I cried. And cried and cried. And then I came back down the mountain and I was like, that was awful. And shortly afterwards, this woman I know, she said to me, we're getting married now next year. Would you think it'd be a good idea to do Kilimanjaro on your honeymoon? And I said, well, yeah, if you want to get divorced immediately. But otherwise.
Well, that's a great achievement. And that's on my bucket list. And you haven't put me off, because I'm going to make sure I've got plenty of sleep bags.
Yeah, plenty. Yeah.
Was it a local tour operator or was it an Irish company that organized it?
It was organized with through an Irish crowd via a UK crowd, and it was really well organized, don't get me wrong. We had a doctor with us as well, which was just as well, because one of the women had to be airlifted off due to hypothermia. Long story short, there was a documentary about it on RTE about 10 years ago. And we were doing fundraising for Crumlin Medical Research Foundation. And one of the women, she, you know, got hypothermia. It was pretty stressful. There was a great team camaraderie, and that was great. Yeah. But I genuinely think that we were all a bit affected, not post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure.
But we all, you know, we were all in contact afterwards, and we all said that for the first week or two, we were a bit shook. And not just physically, you're talking mentally. And I can't even put my finger on as to why, other than maybe lack of oxygen.
Well, what time of year was it that you went? Was it particularly?
No, it was about September, October. So it was a pleasant time. Like if this was Irish weather, you're
ideal,
talking,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You go into the tropical forest. And then as you go up, it gets colder. And then and you just have all your clothes on. And getting into your sleeping bag at night, you're wearing all your clothes. You're wearing a hat. And you're doing that thing. I don't know if you know South Park and Cartman, the character in the orange hoodie. Yeah. He pulls the hood real tight. So you can just about kind of see his nose and his mouth. That's what it's like in bed. And then you're on these tablets to prevent altitude sickness. But they make you need to wee quite a bit. So you have to get out of the tent, put your shoes on. And not to harp on about it, but like going 200 yards to the loo and back, it felt like you had done a marathon up a hill. Your heart and lungs would just be racing.
You might need a little pot. There's call for a potty there. Did you share your tent or was it?
I did. I shared mine with a lovely woman that I used to work with, Sharon. Sharon Delaney, who worked out in RTÉ with me at the time. So we were great, you know, and there was that brilliant camaraderie, and there's nothing like being in a sort of a challenging, you know, albeit a nice, pleasant sort of quote unquote holiday vibe. It definitely does strengthen a friendship. Yeah. Bond.
What a great experience. I hope you got loads of photos of it.
No, because your battery.
Well, you're filming it. Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, there is the documentary, but when you get up into the cold, the batteries don't last in the cold. And so as a result, you wouldn't have like phone batteries wouldn't have lasted. You wouldn't have had any music to listen to. Camera batteries were dead pretty quickly. But there is the documentary. That sounds like all I've done is moan about Kilimanjaro. But
no, but it's great. No,
that's the realistic side for me. Yeah,
it's great. I want to hear everything about your travels, Ruth. I want to hear everything. I'm going to bring it back a bit further now. What's your first holiday memory? Like the first holiday that you took a flight on, boat or whatever.
Oh, a boat. Okay, well, a boat involved a day trip to Llandudno in Wales. And I was only, I'd say, about 5 or 6 years old. And I'm still not sure why they brought us there. I'm sure it was a lovely place. But there would have been...
School trip, was it?
No, it was my mother and 8 children and a load of sandwiches headed over. And I'm very bad on boats, so I'm sure I was sick all the way over. But that was my first ever boat trip. We were lucky that there was room for all of us. My brothers used to be put in the boot of the car. There was like, you'd have the 5 sisters in the car. Listen, these were different times.
Sounds great.
And then the first flight was, I was about 13, and my eldest sister had just had twins. And you know, this thing of, I think it's kids under 2 fly for free. And so she had said, would you like to come with us to be a babysitter for a week or two? And I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. Except the reality is I was there as a babysitter with 2 small kids running around a swimming pool. So I was like, on my toes all the time.
How old were you?
I was 13, and my sister loves to remind me that when the plane was landing, her husband would be an apprehensive flyer, so he was distracted. The twins were bawling, and apparently I was crying because I had pains in my ears because it was my first time in a flight.
Aww.
So I'd say my sister probably didn't leave the country again for a long time. I can't actually remember the first time I flew on holidays like that. That was my first flight. And OK, it was a holiday, but I was a babysitter. But I can't remember. It wouldn't have been very common in my family just because there were so many of us.
Yeah, sure. And you know, when kids are running around the pool like that, you do have to just have the armband stuck on them. I hope you did do that. You did stick your
arm. Yeah. And actually, do you know what, Michelle? So I'm originally from Roscommon, and my friends still flag me because they say, do you remember when you used to babysit the twins and bring them up to town? And we used to have these, we used to call them the leashes. And it was like, I'd have one bit strapped on my wrist and one bit strapped on the other one's wrist. But there was a big, long, like a telephone coil wire between us. So they could run as far away as about 2 meters. And then cartoon style, they'd be like, and they'd come back to you. And so they were great. And I know they looked ridiculous, but with 2 kids, like it's the only way you can manage. And you also still have your hands free to, you know, be able to do grab things and whatnot.
Absolutely. You're outnumbered. I traveled always with my kids. My kids always came away with me, especially when they were small, no matter how small. And there's something great about a lead. I know it doesn't looks politically incorrect, but you like to keep them near, especially when you're traveling in a different country.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So what was the funniest thing that ever happened to you on holiday, Ruth?
The funniest thing that ever happened to me, I think it could have been the time I was naked in a spa.
That's kind of proper conduct now in Austria. You have
to
be
naked.
Well, you know
what? Yeah. And actually, in fairness, we were in Germany at the time. So my mother-in-law is German.
Right.
And she's from Hamburg, which I've gone to visit several times. I tell you what, Hamburg is a great city to visit. You've got all of the Beatles sort of history to it. You've got some gorgeous coastline. Like, I know it's North Sea, gorgeous coastline. And you can rent a bike, bring it on the train, head out the countryside, cycle in along the coastline. It's really lovely there. Also helped by the fact that my husband is a native German speaker. So I'm like a princess. I'd say something like, I'd like a cup of tea and a bun, and he'll go off and he'll do the German speaking. But yeah, I think my first time in a spa was maybe the funniest because I was just so kind of self-conscious. And for ages, we've gone to Germany quite a bit, and we've been to Austria even on our honeymoon. And every time we'd see, because they have these amazing, I want to call it a swimming pool. You know, like your local town has the swimming pool, but this is like a swimming pool with five or six pools and a sea and a salt pool and all these different facilities for, you know, all ages. And
then it's a spa town. What's the name of the town?
Oh, this is just like a normal town, though. Like in
It's not an actual spring. It's not a town with its own spring. Oh,
no.
Right.
Okay. And in fact, then you've another area where, as you can go as an adult, maybe it's the over 18s, and then you pay a little bit more, and you've got your infrared, all your different saunas, steam rooms, and then of course you go outside in the snow to cool down. So we did that in the Nip, and my husband got into it a bit quicker than I did, and I was like, oh, I can't be taken off my towel. It's, if you can imagine your local cafe in your local town where the bank manager is saying how are you to the teacher, and they all know each other, they're all sitting there
stark naked.
And in fact, there's an area where you could go and you can sit and have a beer, and they're sitting there with the legs crossed having a beer buck naked. That was just it's a memory that days with me. It really does.
I know what you're talking about. I was in one in Austria, and I know exactly. But when the beer comes around, it does distract. But I found it very awkward.
Yeah.
Well, we're not used to that. With the Swedish and everything are so used to it. That's the way they.
Yeah, and you cannot wear swimming togs because they look on them as unhygienic. They would much rather you go. Now, by the way, in case you're listening, going naked sitting in a spa, you always have a towel under your bum. Don't be worrying about that. You always have a towel under your bum. There is a certain level of decorum. But I kind of, with time and age and maybe wisdom, I've learned to appreciate that. Do you know what? They're just flipping well bodies. And we all have a body.
Absolutely. You know?
Aren't we lucky to have them? So I do think of that, though, quite often.
Oh, very good. And you know, I asked you what your worst travel experience was, and you wouldn't have Kilimanjaro as that, would you? Because there's this huge sense of accomplishment.
Oh, Kilimanjaro, without doubt. Yeah, definitely up there. Now, there was the time I got blood poisoning in China.
You've got to tell us about that. Oh, you've got to say.
Yeah, this was brilliant, actually. So a friend of mine and his wife, this is about 10 years. Do you know what? It was the year before the Beijing Olympics. And my friend contacted me and he said, my wife, he said, Elaine is after finding these phenomenally good value flights from London to China. I think they were 80, they wouldn't even have been pounds, 80 euros each way. And he said, the flight is next year. So he said, look, worst case scenario, if the company goes bust between now and then, we've lost £160. And if we do get to go there, then great. We went, they organized it then, there was about 8 of us went away. We had a great time in China. Now, two things. I'm not the kind of person that goes away and typically eats just Pizza Hut and McDonald's all the time. I like to try the local stuff. But by God, our stomachs were in bits the entire time. There was no middle ground with our, and you know, you don't need to hear about the toilet escapades, but like we didn't go on a fancy all pre-planned holiday. We went on we know we're going here first. We know we're going to get a train there and go and see that. We know we're going to go here and then go and see that. At one point then I woke up and I was like, lads, I feel really sick. Oh, actually, I should bring the story back a tiny bit. Sorry, Michelle.
Beijing or Shanghai or which?
So we flew into Hong Kong and stayed there a couple of days and then went over to the mainland where we all had our passports stamped. And you get looked suspiciously at when you work in media. Well, you certainly did at the time. I'd had to get a letter from my boss in RT at the time saying Ruth is actually going to China on holidays and she's not doing any work, any media work while she's there. And that's how I got my visa. So we went, got over to the mainland and then we went cross country. We went up to Beijing. We had a look around there and I decided I want to see the pandas in the zoo. And so I had missed out on, because it was 8 of us, sometimes you'd head off and do different things at different times. I went to this amazing park in Beijing on my own and I thought, oh, this is lovely now. I've seen that. Yeah. Now I'm going to get a taxi and go to the zoo and see the pandas in Beijing because that's what you do. And I went outside.
Without a word of Mandarin.
And do you know what I did have the foresight to do? I asked them to write down the name of where we were staying on a piece of paper.
Thank God you did that.
I went outside taxi drivers and we had been told, don't get in a taxi that doesn't have a taxi sign on top and that doesn't have a meter. So I went outside and I saw these taxis and the sign on the top hopped into the cab anyway, and I said, I was able to say Beijing Zoo. And I said, where's the meter? Meter? And your man lifts a little kind of a towel, and he had the meter hidden. So in other words, if the cop saw him with the meter, he wasn't a legitimate taxi. So, and then he also, he took the roof sign off and brought it into the car with him. No. And I thought, oh, Jesus, lads, I'm going to be absolutely shanghaied here. And that was an accidental pun. So I said, no. And I jumped out. Anyway, I got to the zoo. And when I was leaving the zoo, I went to a line of official taxis outside to go back to my accommodation. And I handed the first guy the piece of paper. And he looked at it and he went, no, and gestured behind me as if to say, get into the car behind. So I went to the next one, showed him the address. No, must have gone through about 7 or 8 cabs. None of them would, even consider. And well, it wasn't that it was far. I think what it was that the address was written down incorrectly. And I genuinely, I thought, I am going to be abandoned without a word.
Did you even remember the name of the hotel in English?
Do you know what? It wasn't a hotel. Somebody had organized that we were in these little traditional Chinese houses. I can't remember what it was called.
Hutangs.
That's the word. That's the word. Yeah,
Hutangs. Okay. And they're brilliant though, aren't they? They're fabulous. You really experience it when you go around those.
But then about 2 days later, I had gotten a tiny cut in my toe going around the park. Honestly, this story goes somewhere, I promise you. And I woke up and I felt really sick and fluey. And I had this red line going up my leg. So you know the way you might see the blue of a vein.
Oh my God, you had an insect. Was it an insect?
Basically, I got blood poisoning. And I was really, really sick. And so then we actually had to get on a flight and fly down to wherever the Terracotta Warriors are. Which is in the middle of nowhere.
Xi'an, isn't it? She is.
Guangcheng? I don't know. But anyway.
No, it just escaped me. Yeah.
Got there, got to our accommodation. I was really sick. So one of the women from the accommodation and my friend came with me to the hospital. And bear in mind now, I'm about 5'10". When I walked into the hospital, they literally stopped and stared at me. Oh, by the way, strangers would take our picture.
That's true. I bought a crowd of school children to Beijing. Can you imagine? They all felt like rock stars. They were instant Instagrammers. The people, and you know, the people come in from the country to Tiananmen Square and that, they do their kind of pilgrimage. They thought they were rock stars. They just, that's what a lot of the people are. They're actually Chinese
People were handing us babies so that they would take our picture. Holding their baby. So anyway, we're in the hospital and I go in with this red line advancing up my leg, and I'm allergic to penicillin. And typically penicillin is the first antibiotic they would give somebody when they're showing signs of illness. So I was literally roaring at them going, no penicillin, don't give me penicillin. I don't obviously speak the language or the dialect. They understood it, but they put a drip of some non-penicillin thing in my arm and brought me to a room where I kind of began to understand this will be a day visit. I'll be here for a couple of hours. They brought me to a room with 3 beds and all the beds were full. And I thought, you know what? It's China. I'll sit on the floor. I don't care. But then a man in the middle bed was just getting up out of the bed. He literally threw back the duvet. A duvet? What hospital has a duvet?
Duvet?
Yeah. So he threw it back, put on his shoes and walked out of the room. And the nurse beside me gestured to me, that's your bed.
Not to get in. Oh no. Yeah. No, so on top of kind
of I perched on the edge. Now I was sick as a dog. Like I was literally being poisoned. And then she was doing the gesturing of lie down, lie down. And I just describe it as being like a complicated Pilates move.
There's more to that story, but
I don't want to traumatize your listeners. It was bizarre. All my friends are like, oh my God, don't tell us the story about China again where you had to get into the bed and it was warm.
It's unheard of. Imagine it nowadays.
Oh my God. Unreal. Yeah. Unreal.
Oh my God. What a great. I never asked what you thought of Beijing Zoo.
I just remember thinking it's a bit dark and a bit sad where the pandas were. But now, Michelle, this could have been 2007. So it would have been a different time, maybe. I think I literally just went to see the pandas and left. I don't remember anything else about it. Why have you?
No, I reckon I thought the pandas were actually doing quite okay there. I was quite harrowing the monkeys, and they were kind of like wolves.
Aww.
And it was just the condition they were in was so brutal. Yeah. It really, really upset me. And I kind of thought, I shouldn't be supporting this. This is Yeah, yeah, really, really upset me now, I have to say.
Yeah.
The pandas were great entertainment. The pandas were lovely.
yeah.
And their condition, their surroundings were definitely the best, their environment. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was kind of the saddest zoo. Anyway, look, yeah. That is part. I do think tourism is going to be changing. And I do think that kind of mass tourism, huge amounts and groups of people moving, maybe is going to be changed slightly, I think. So there might be just better environments for animals and people when we go and see them, you know. So who would be your favourite travelling companion? Dead or alive now. You've got a lot of choice there.
Dead or alive? Mm. Well, do you know what? I'll be honest, not to sound like a total sap. My husband is great company on holidays. We kind of love a bit of the same thing, but we encourage each other. We're like, oh, come on, we do this. Oh, we go down there and have a look. Oh, come on, we try this mad food. Or
push each other on, yeah.
Yeah, so it is great like that. I suppose I could have notions about going on holidays with, you know, because I'm a radio presenter, some amazing musical artist. But like, I'd say if you went on holidays with the Rolling Stones, you'd be exhausted after about 2 days. The kind of shenanigans they'd get up to, I don't think I'd be able for that. Like, I do like on a holiday to have a nice cross between a bit of relaxing, a bit of moving around, but I do like to get my 10 hours sleep at night, Michelle. So,
oh, right.
Yeah. Like, honest to God, the husband is just, without a doubt, the best holiday companion. We literally, we egg each other on. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You push your boundaries so you get to see other and different things.
Yeah.
But if you could be anywhere in the world right now, where would it be?
Oh, New Zealand, without a doubt.
Oh, because they can move around freely.
Well, actually, you know, that really amps it up now. But
yeah.
I think maybe 15 years ago, I was in between jobs. What do they call that? Gardening leave. And I was about to start a big job and I realized I had about 6 weeks off. And Michelle, this will show you how naive I am. I went down to the family home in Roscommon and I said, lads, I have a couple of weeks off. I think I should go somewhere, take advantage of the time because I'll never have 6 weeks off again. And I went in, literally to the travel agents in Roscommon and said, I'd like to go somewhere next week. Where's the farthest I could go? And they said, there's flights to New Zealand. And I went, yep, grand, sign me up. Thanks very much.
That's far enough away.
and I literally, like, I'm not joking. This was pre-internet. I had a mobile phone, but like this was before data on mobile phones. I went over, I had a New Zealand travel handbook and I literally didn't have a clue where I was going to go. I knew I was landing in Christchurch and I said, do you know what? I'll rent a car now tomorrow. So I landed in Christchurch, had one night's accommodation book, rented a car and just drove off around the place. And oh my God, I loved
all on
it.
Your own, all on your own.
All on my own, yeah, all on my own. Oh my God, I absolutely loved it. It is the most amazingly beautiful country I have ever seen. The South Island is just this amazing expanse of, like, the only way I could think to describe it is it's like Connemara times 10,000.
Yeah.
You know, if you think Connemara has this amazing landscape, just think like the mountains, there's mountain ranges, they're covered in snow and beside them there's a tropical forest and it was just amazing. The walks were phenomenal. And what I loved about it, and I do like to go for a walk. I would have been in hiking groups by times, but I loved this because you could park somewhere and there'd be a sign saying, you know, location one is a 15 minute walk, location two is an 8 hour walk, location three is a 3 day walk. So you could pick and choose. So I'd be on my own, so I would be able to just like do an hour one or whatever it was. And I'd never seen water as blue as I did on the South Island in the lakes. I think it's called Lake Tekapo. Oh my God, I loved it. I went whitewater rafting only because I had been singing karaoke in the pub the night before and won the prize.
And oh no way! Yeah, oh my God, that's great. What was it? Was it like really rapid waves? Was it quite fierce?
Do you know what? Do you know what it was? You could, like that, all the levels catered for in New Zealand. I said, yeah, I'd like to go on the least scary one. So I went with a bunch of people who were all probably 30 years older than me. So I was like the Indiana Jones because I thought, this is great. I can tolerate this. And they were a little more apprehensive. So I honestly, it was just the best crack. Oh, it was amazing.
It's great. It is whitewater rafting. I've only done it once. I did it in Peru, in the Andes with my son. Yeah, and it wasn't too bad. It was level three. Yeah. It was level two. It was okay. Yeah. I would not be able for really harsh, rapid ride like that. I really would.
No,
Because you do get, I mean, you're thrown around the place, like you really are. And at the end of it, they wanted us to jump off a bridge, like, that's okay.
Oh my God. You see, like that, I've no interest in doing bungee jumps or anything like that. So New Zealand does seem to be the place to go if you want to do like some of the crazy sports.
I'm very envious because I've only been at the top of the South Island where it's all sheep. So all I saw were sheep. It is beautiful. I took the ferry from Wellington into Picton. I went through the Marlborough Sounds or something it's called?
Oh, the Marlborough Sounds and the Milford Sounds. I never know which is which.
Yeah, but it went through the Sounds anyway. And it was a gorgeous little town. It was weird, like nearly Norway and Wales mixed or something like that, you know.
And is there a town up there that has the 1920s? What do they call that style?
Art Deco.
There's a town there that's all. And you know what you did miss out on, Michelle, by a hair's breadth? On the northwest of the South Island is the Abel Tasman Sea, and I went sea kayaking there, and it's, and you can go hiking, and you can do like a 1 hour, a 1 day, a 1 week hike. I actually found my old pictures from New Zealand recently, and they were fab.
I love my kayaking. I tend to go kayaking wherever I do. I love it. I'm terrible at it. Like, you know, and I get really tired. I've kayaked in Bilbao in northern, you know, up through the central of the city. I've kayaked through in Thailand with my son.
Have you done the ones on the canal in Dublin?
I haven't done them in Dublin. I've done them down in Leitrim. I've kayaked in Leitrim in the Hidden Heartlands.
You can go kayaking on the canal. And they're the slightly wide canal. Sorry, the slightly wider boats, so you're not afraid you're going to roll off.
There's a much better chance of me kayaking in Dublin than New Zealand this year, I think.
I know, yeah.
We've spoken about as far away as you can be. Where in Ireland is your favourite place to holiday? Do you have any secret or hidden gems that are especially nice to visit?
Do you know, there's a place, I can't even remember the name of it. It's somewhere off Loch Derg down in County Clare, and it's near Ogunlow. And it's just beautiful. You've a bit of water, you've loads of countryside for nice walks. And there was even, I wish I could remember the name of this place. My husband would, of course, because he's good at these, remembering these things. And there was a lovely little tapas bar there. And like in a small little town. Oh, it was gorgeous in Clare. And if I could find the name of it, I will let you know, and you can put it in the podcast notes. I love that. And to be honest, like as a kid, I would have gone to Sligo a lot. So we did Ross's Point and Strand Hill. And I do think that Sligo is the most stunning part of the world. I love West Clare because like that, it's such dramatic countryside. So even if you're just driving through, it's lovely. And you're usually stuck behind a camper van going like 50 kilometres an hour. So you really have to, you have the time to soak up the lovely atmosphere.
Absolutely. Breathe in, take it all in, the burn, the unusual flora and, you know, wildlife. Yeah. It really is. It's spectacular in there.
Yeah.
I love it. So have you got plans for this summer?
Well, Michelle, we were beside ourselves. We had decided, you know what we're going to do? You know what we're going to do? We're going to rent a caravan for a week. And we're going to, so this crowd, this is not a paid for endorsement. I heard that Leitrim Caravan Hire have a great reputation. So contacted them and they will put the caravan in either Ross's Point or Strand Hill. And as I mentioned, big soft spot for Sligo. And it's meant to be lovely. And we were thinking, you know what? We'd love that. Read books. Drive around, have barbecues at night outside the caravan, and then poxy level 5. So that's what we had planned.
But hopefully it'll change by...
Hopefully.
Well, we are. The hospitality is hoping it'll be by July.
Your heart would break for people trying to make a living in Ireland. Like, and I hope that when we all, whenever that is, get vaccinated, that people are, you know, that they remember to support what it is that's in their own country. So, you know what, to be honest, like I said earlier, I got outside my 5 kilometer zone today because I got to go to the dentist. Genuinely pretty exciting. So if I manage to get over as far as Strand Hill,
it'll be good. You'll embrace
what's amazing
it
over there, actually, those seaweed baths. Oh my god, I live and die for a seaweed bath. And you know what, Michelle,
oh yeah,
there's a difference between the seaweed on the West Coast and the East Coast. And I heard a documentary one time about this. The stuff on the West Coast is very good for the baths and maybe the eating, and the stuff on the East Coast is better for something else. So living on the, I'm living in Dublin over 20 years. I do miss quick accessibility to going to a seaweed bath. I know seaweed you can baths, drop,
yeah.
I know you can drop a thing in them in your own bathtub at home, but I don't think it's the same.
No, it's not the same. And you know, one of the best ones I ever had was in Lusty Beg up in Fermanagh. Lusty Beg is a real hidden little, it's like Northern Ireland's hidden, what do you call that, that place in Wales? No, it doesn't have Italian architecture or anything, but it's like a little world of its own. Oh. And it's a little tiny island on the Loch, Lower Loch Earn, and it's absolutely stunning. It's just, you know, and this summer I had the delight of taking a cruiser there. So we came in on the water, and you have to, if you take a car, you have to get a little kind of a little ferry to bring you over. Now it's only like 100 feet, but it's so cute. And they have a lovely restaurant and a couple of little pubs and different types of accommodation. And fairy trail.
Do they stamp your passport when you're going over? Because it sounds almost like you're going to a different country.
they should. It is so cute. I just love this place, Lusty Beg. And their spa. Their spa is the cheapest spa I've ever been in, and their seaweed baths. I mean, I swear to God, I was thinking for a hen party, it'd be the best place to ever go, because you could get all your waxing done and your eyebrows and your facials and everything.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Like, I think that the waxing all started at like £10, £15. You'd have everything done for like £25. Like, it was amazing. Absolutely. I know, no, that's it. But I totally agree with you with the old seaweed. Absolutely. It's fabulous. What if you were going to a hotel now, what would be your most used facilities? What would you kind of see as your priority when you're on your holidays?
Well, if I'm in a hotel, and I'm sorry to the hoteliers, but I love having loads of baths in the room. So in terms of a room, I do like to have a lovely bath, and I'll always bring loads of Epsom salts and lavender oil. And so I'd say I leave the bathtub in a bit of a sort of a greasy, salty mess. So sorry about that, hoteliers, but it just, I love it. Because when I have a bath here at home, I'm like, oh, just clean the bath now afterwards. It's lovely when I go away. But in a hotel, I do like, you know what I do love? And I might sound old before my time, she said optimistically. I do like a two-night break where you get a nice dinner included one of the nights, particularly if you're in some of the nice, like I know this time last year, just before lockdown, just before the first lockdown, we had a two-night break in Mount Juliet, and it was a midweek break, and we had dinner one of the nights. Oh my God, it was just lovely. I find it so relaxing. You can be off for a stroll during the day. I think we got bicycles. We cycled around the grounds. We went for a walk. And then you come back up to the room. I absolutely destroyed the bathtub with all my smelly oils and things. And then, you know, you literally get cleaned up and you go downstairs and you have a lovely dinner.
It's just super, Mount Juliet. I mean, you don't have to be a golfer. They've got one of these special, you know, golf course. I think the Irish Open is due to be held there this year. It was meant to be on last year, but it was postponed. Yeah. But Mount Juliet for me, the horse riding was just fantastic. I brought my daughter down there and we went riding around the grounds. Oh my God, it's just so stunning. So
I love a two-night break. And because for years I've worked weird, our radio presenting typically means you'll end up like on a weird random weekend shift for years, or like late night shift or whatever it is. And so I kind of got in the habit of going on a break whenever I could. And so sometimes I'd be like, let's just go in a midweek because it's better value. The hotel is probably a little bit quieter. And I'd nearly sell my spleen now to go on a nice two-night break. But anywhere like that, where there's a two-night, it's just so relaxing. You don't have to be stressing about checking out of the room after one good night's sleep. And you know what? I don't think you ever sleep really well the first night when you're away somewhere. I think it's, somebody told me one time, it's something to do with when we lived in the caves. That if you were in a different place, if you were somewhere new, you had to be kind of alert in case dinosaurs came looking for you.
Oh, really?
Now, this is kind of way back when, do you know, this is like.
Oh, no, listen, I believe in that. Did you ever read that book, Why Men Don't Listen and Women Can't Read Maps?
No.
Did you ever read? Oh my God, that is such a good book. I think it was brought out in the 90s, but it explains an awful lot of our habits as men and women go back to our times in the caves, you know. Oh, and like when a man opens the door of the fridge and there's like six packets of butter. Where's the butter? There's no butter. It's because they're trained to go out and to look for just one animal in distance and run after it.
Yeah.
Whereas a woman is taught to scan, and she'll open it and there might be a tiny bit of butter just at the back hidden, and she'll scan the whole thing and she'll find the bit of butter. So it's our instincts.
These were evolutionary things that happened. Yeah. So I think that's really interesting.
I hope we don't lose them now. We're all being packaged and sanitized.
No.
I hope these don't go.
No. Do you know what actually was interesting? Just when you mentioned butter, anytime we have been to Germany, which, as I mentioned, my mother-in-law is German. She lives in Dublin, but we use it as an excuse to go to Germany on holiday. Kerrygold butter is everywhere. And Kerrygold yogurts. And I'm fascinated by that. People just love Kerrygold outside of Ireland. It's fascinating.
Yeah, they've done a great job. It's like Tours of Ireland. I think we really do a great job at promoting ourselves. I mean, what other country can have their national day coloured over the entire world? And of course, St. Patrick's Day is fantastic the way it's coloured. Yeah. Every country in the world has their icons. Yeah. And that was a great promotion. So Ruth, where, I'm just going to ask you very quickly, have you taken any special photos on your travels that you would remember, any special selfies or even photos?
Yeah. Do you know what? There was one particularly lovely love. Oh, my God. This, even when I think of it now. So my husband's uncle was turning 60 and he was living in Amsterdam at the time. And he said to us, lads, I'm going to have a bit of a 60th party. Do you want to come over? It'll just be dinner and a few drinks. So we said, great. Now, then he sent us over a menu and it was like it was from three different restaurants. And he said, so you choose a starter from this one, a mains from this and a dessert. And we were like, oh, okay, what's going on? Do you know what's happened? No idea. So we were all arranged to meet at this particular hotel and there was about 40 of us. And the hotel, Amsterdam, of course, the hotel was on the water. So we all had a drink to start and it was a scorching hot day. And then he said, okay, our ride is here. We got onto a boat all sat and it was gorgeous. We were sitting at the back and you somewhere out the front. And then we pulled up to some side of a canal bank or something. And these people came on carrying trays of food and said, like, who ordered the this and who ordered the that? And your starters put down in front of you. And we were like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And
then,
you know, it goes on. And then about 45 minutes later, we pull in at a totally different spot. They take the trays off us and the main courses come in and then you do it again and then there's dessert. Oh my God, it was the loveliest thing. So we took the most amazing, well, I say we, the husband took the most amazing picture. And every time I see, when you're scanning through your photos and every time I see it, I think that must be a stock photo. And every time I say, how is this in my photos? Rob will say, do you not remember? We took that on holidays in Amsterdam. It's such a spectacular photo and I'm not really selling it, but I always remember the night with great fondness. People were so surprised by having such a lovely night in the center of Amsterdam, which has a reputation for being just a bit mad and a bit crazy, which it was. But once we were on the water, that was
I can actually just picture it. And you've reminded me, actually, do you know there's a barge in Dublin called La Peniche and it's on the Grand Canal? Have you been on that?
I do.
They do lovely launches.
And, do they?
I think you can hire them out then for events as well. You know, of course for weddings and that.
For pre-COVID, but I've driven past that that canal boat thousands of times, I'd say. And every time I see it, I think, oh, that looks lovely. So yeah, I know exactly.
Well, I've had lunch there and I actually was on a 30th birthday party as well. I think I'm sure it was on that one. And it is a great idea. Once everybody's kind of back to normal, I think things like that are going to be hugely
popular. Yeah, it'll be lovely to do that. I think people will get very fond of being outside or being near fresh air. There's something reassuring about it.
Really
nice. Really good. For sure.
So what are your plans, Ruth? And we know we hear you on the radio Radio Nova and on the Elaine Show. You're often in there presenting, doing Travel Tuesday with me. What else are you up to? Because you have lots of strings to your bow now. You do lots of things, Ruth Scott Media.
You know what? I believe that they call it a portfolio career, which basically is a fancy way of saying you can't make your living out of one of the jobs that you can do. But when you do a lot of different things, Well, that's the portfolio query. So other things I do, like just yesterday, which was, wait now, what day? 2 days ago was International Women's Day. So I would have emceed an event for at Dublin Chamber for International Women's Day. And this time last year, I would have emceed about six different events for International Women's Day. So I do a lot of emceeing, a lot of facilitating discussions and things like that. And that's something I really love, because I don't need to be an expert. I just need to be able to get the best out of people who are on the panel, people who mightn't be accustomed to speaking. And so I really do enjoy that. Then something else that I do is that I am a wedding celebrant. Now, at the minute, I don't have the, let's say, the full qualification to legally solemnize a wedding, which is, you know, when you go to the church and they sign the registry.
Yeah,
that's the example I give, because most people are familiar with that dynamic. So I will, I'm a humanist, which is a, it's just a non-religious group, and they have the capability in Ireland to train people as celebrants who can legally solemnize weddings. So at the end of this year, because I'm doing my training this year, at the end of this year I'll be able to legally solemnize weddings. So, oh, you know, really? Where you might, like, I know myself, I got married a couple of years ago in a hotel in Bunratty, and we had a humanist celebrant. And so he does the ceremony and then you sign the legal document afterwards. And for people wondering, because people always ask, what is it like? It's basically, it looks like the footprint of a church wedding, which, look, I'm giving that example because I know growing up, that was just the kind of thing I got to see. It's like that, just with the religion taken out. So instead of readings and prayers, you've got stories and poems. You still get people to read things. People can join in and sing. You can still have your string quartet and your whatever fanciness you want, if you want a 49 piece choir, which we did not have. But yeah, you know, it's a lovely way to do a wedding. I think
it's gorgeous. I was at a beautiful one with my friend Kathy in County Wicklow, and I can't remember the name of the building. We had our dining in a kind of a marquee, but they have this it's like an old church, and it has
Do you know where that is? That's that place. Oh, it's like on the top of a hill, and there's no
stunning views.
There.
But
Is it Brook Lodge?
It's not Brook Lodge. No, it's not Brook Lodge.
Okay, because I was at a wedding one time in Brook Lodge, and they like that. They have a deconsecrated church that you can have.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely, yeah. It was absolutely gorgeous. Anything else planned for yourself? Anything else going on?
You know what? We sort of jokingly said we had a 3-week holiday in America last summer, and it was amazing. And we went from Seattle to San Francisco, and we drove down the West Coast, and we stopped off at a wedding, which in fact I officiated at, in this beautiful forest setting. And then we went down as far as LA and stayed with friends of ours there.
Fabulous. So that must have been early on in the year then, or the year before?
The year before it was kind of September.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
And it was great. And when we did that, we said, you know what? That was a great holiday. We should maybe take our time and save up before we go on our next adventure. And so New Zealand is in the back of my head and Canada is in the back of my husband's head. So, you know, on the one hand, with like getting outside that 5 kilometers, sorry to harp on about it, we'd love that. But
you could do a 2-center, go via Canada down.
I'd say though, if we did, we'd want to go to, let's say, Canada and take 2 weeks. If we could stretch it to 3 weeks to go around and enjoy it for that. Yeah. And then see, like, there's no way you'd go on another trip like that for, because New Zealand is very expensive now. Like when I was there, it was cheap as chips. So New Zealand and Canada are sort of in the middle distance.
Yeah, very good. Very good. This too shall pass and we will all travel again.
Yeah.
And we have to keep Can remembering
I
tell you that.
A quick funny one, actually. One of my colleagues in Nova, they're Marty Miller and Dee Woods. They are both presenters on Nova, and they have gone and gotten themselves a big old van. And they are now, well, he is doing all the organizing to get it kind of transformed, getting a door cut in, getting a window space cut in, getting beds and all sorts of things. And they have 2 small kids, and they are going to be driving around at least Ireland anyway when lockdown is lifted. And I'd say they'll be heading maybe to Scotland. So things like that. I love the sound of.
Absolutely. And they won't be alone. There'll be loads of people following suit. It'll be great when we get out there. Listen, take care, Ruth.
Thanks a million, Michelle. It was lovely to talk to you today. And stay well.
Yeah, you too. Stay well and safe. Thanks, Ruth.
Thanks, Michelle.
Well, I really enjoyed that chat with Ruth Scott. She has such an adventurous spirit, and this really helps when you set off on any trip. But it's also important to be prepared, and I always suggest a good travel agent is the difference between a wonderful holiday or a disastrous trip. So I had a few important questions for my friend Kira Foley of Platinum Travel this week.
Well, with me today, I have Kira Foley, Managing Director of award-winning Platinum Travel, I have to add. Kira, it's lovely to see you and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle. I was really looking forward to our chat today.
Yeah, I think people really need to realise that you guys are still out there in the travel industry, providing services and looking after people. You've had the most horrendous time since the lockdown of COVID. What has it been like, Kira?
It's been an interesting and a fairly serious ride the last year, I have to say. We kind of were caught off guard when it first happened. We didn't think it was going to have the knock-on effect. And then every couple of months, you thought it was only another few months and another few months. And now here we are a year later. Looking back over the year, I think what people don't realise is that we've had to stay open. So we're refunding sales back as made as far as summer 2019. And then we're trying to rebook people now into 2022 because people were booked for 2020 and then moved to 2021 and 2022. So we've had to stay open the entire time to administer those bookings, speak to clients, reassure clients, and fight and chase refunds for people constantly. So it's been difficult, all at no pay, I might add.
Absolutely, and people have to realise that. It has been very difficult out there for a lot of people, especially those with their own businesses. So I think it's really important that, you know, people are patient with you and we'll support you when we can travel again. I think that's something very important because already now, Kira, and I've sent you a little email, I've been getting emails from people looking for ideas and for help with planning for big trips in 2022. And is this something that you see happening in your own business? Do you think that there are green shoots out there?
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you had asked me 2 to 3 weeks ago, I probably would have had a different response. But in the last couple of weeks and speaking to travel partners, both in the UK and the USA, who are a little bit ahead of us at the moment, I can see things changing, which is fantastic. So, for instance, I was on a conference call yesterday with 6 different states in the USA. They are all opening up. Vaccinations are being done. The national parks are open. The hotels are open. The restaurants are open. And they're traveling interstate all over the USA now. Different states have different rules, but for the most part, it's good news coming out of every state in a positive direction. UK similarly are a little bit ahead of us as well. They're starting to see a huge increase in bookings, still not back to where it was and it won't be. But as soon as they saw the vaccination numbers going up, the inquiries are coming in and the bookings are coming in. So we are a little bit cautious and behind that, but we are coming up behind them and the inquiries are coming in. So that's always a plus.
Would you think that people, if they perhaps have saved from by not going away over the last 18 months, would you think that this would be a good time to start thinking about? Because in 2022, it sounds like a lot of people are going to want to travel and for big holidays too.
Absolutely. And there's a number of things that will affect this. So the first answer is yes, definitely. I would start planning and I'd start looking out there. You don't actually have to book yet, but if you are definitely thinking about something, start planning and start researching for your big holiday. Most of the inquiries that we're getting and discussions that we're having from people are all bucket list trips, you know, big trips, people that are planning stuff that they'd wanted to do for years and now they've saved up the money to do it. And of course, you know, there are an awful lot of people who have been affected as well, who mightn't be able to afford the big, huge bucket list trip, but they will be looking forward to their European sun break or there may be a city break as well. The second thing is you have to take into consideration that everybody that moved from 2020 to 2021 is now moving to 2022. So that's a huge number of people. We had 400,000 from last year to this year, but add on whatever people have booked for this year into next year and you're into massive numbers. So the allocation and the availability is going to be very, very tight. So I'll just use USA as an example again because of the conference I was at. But if you look at Yellowstone National Park, they are sold out for all their lodgings for this summer. And if you look at 2022, the bookings are being booked way ahead in advance, you know, camper vans, 5-star hotels, 3-star hotels, and Europe will be the same. So if there's something specific that you want, book it well in advance. There's low deposits out there. There's great cover for you and booking with confidence with all the cruise companies, the airlines, the hoteliers. They're looking after people with low deposits and, you know, giving them the option to change if they need to change. So planning is definitely a thing they should be doing now.
What about travel insurance? Has there been any indications from the ITAA or anybody about what where we'll stand with insurance?
Well, at the moment, insurance, there's a number of policies out there that you can get, and they are changing regularly. But if they have different sections on them in regards to what you'll be covered for. So you may, for instance, be covered by medically if you get COVID yourself. However, you may not be covered if your holiday is cancelled due to COVID. So it's really, really important that you read the terms and conditions of every policy that you look at. Pick up the phone and ring them. You know, I mean, we have a number of policies that we use here, but I would, you know, investigate them and be sure.
And read the fine print.
Read the fine print. It's very, very important. And in fairness, insurance companies, much as we love to hate them, they were massively hit as well. So, you know, there's a knock-on effect all around the industry. So read the fine print. But most bookings now for 2022, you should be able to book with a low deposit. On that note, airlines are not loaded yet. We're a little bit early. They only get loaded 10 or 11 months out. So unless you're booking a charter package, that won't be bookable yet, but you can book your cruise, you can book your escorted tour. That's all bookable.
And is there any indication of prices or how they'll be changed with the airline situation, or are we kind of at sea with
we
that?
Are a little bit. I think if you were to look now for booking for say September, October, November 2021, which I do believe there's going to be, you know, some travel at the second half of this year or the last quarter anyway, you will see that the prices are quite good at the moment, but be prepared. Because as soon as it opens up and as soon as it's safe to go, those prices are going to rocket because the demand is going to be absolutely astronomical. It's going to be huge. And while that excites us in one way, we don't want to be, you know, disappointing clients with prices in the other way. But unfortunately, it's supply and demand. We're hosting a number of evenings over the next 2 weeks, our inspirational travel evenings, which we're really excited about. And that's just to inspire customers. We're bringing partners on board, suppliers on board. And we'd love to have a chat with you, Michelle, in the future as well. Just to inspire people, and we'd encourage people to you know, drop in and have a listen and just get some ideas for those special trips. But yeah, book early, definitely.
But see, this is what this travel podcast is all about, Ciara. It's about kind of feeding our wanderlust and helping us see beyond this difficult time to when we can return to travel, because it's something people in the industry are so passionate about, and
extremely.
You know, and it's something that everybody really enjoys. And when we recall our favorite memories, it's usually a trip we've taken or a holiday, you know, that stands out as the highlight of our year. So I think it's really, really important. Having missed it now for so long, I think it's going to be hugely popular.
It's going to be hugely popular. And I get excited even discussing these trips with people now, because they're getting to book things that we have been dying for people to book for years, like the big wide open spaces of the road trips in the USA, the, you know, the boutique river cruises all over Europe, the fabulous Asia adventures. There's so much out there and so much choice. And the value at the moment for early bookings is amazing. So we look forward so much to looking after customers.
And I think it's important as well that people realise, I mean, it's something terrible to look at, the coronavirus meter, but there are countries that haven't been touched, barely touched, you know, that they you know, countries like Fiji, which I was in last year, countries like Barbados and the Seychelles. I've mentioned them before on the podcast because their numbers have been so low and they're very safe places.
Extremely, extremely. And I love that you mentioned Barbados, because they've worked extremely hard and they've been really keeping everybody in the know about what's going on. Similarly with the Indian Ocean, the Maldives, the Seychelles, they've done a phenomenal job as well. I suppose as islands, it maybe makes it a little bit easier because they're smaller and more compact, but they're not unattainable. Absolutely not. And I think these are the places that need our support. Tourism needs our support. I mean, all these islands, they rely on our business. We need to get back out and spend with them. Because if you've been to Fiji, how much of that island is based around incoming, you know, passengers?
They really rely on it. Even the schools rely on, you know, visitors bringing pencils and paper and books to the schools. Yeah. So they rely heavily on tourism. I think moving forward, though, I think, you know, people will want to go to places that haven't been hit, like New Zealand, perhaps. Like, are they going to let people in? That is a question. I mean, we don't know.
She's quite strict, in fairness to her. She's quite strict. I have to say, she's exactly, I think, between her earthquakes and having babies and running countries. And she's a fairly amazing woman.
A remarkable woman. She really
she
is.
She really, really is. I think, you know, I mean, Australia and New Zealand are very strict with borders closed. I have a pal over there who's was hoping to come home this summer and won't be able to come home, which is disappointing. Australia and New Zealand are very, very strict. I do believe that they will open up to tourism again. They both certainly need it, especially in New Zealand, but it might be just a little bit further down the line. It may be a case if the USA opens up before Europe. It might be a case that, you know, parts of Asia open up before other parts. So, I mean, some countries have really surprised us with how they've handled it. Countries that you would not have expected to be as good, you know. So it is a bit of a waiting game.
And one of my favourites is Thailand. I adore that. And they have really controlled the virus with very strict lockdowns. But apparently, you know, they are prepared to take people in. But, you know, people aren't going now and they're afraid to go. And it's such a shame because, you know, it's a country very much where you can live and enjoy the outdoors, which is, I think that's going to be very, very popular.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that's it. I think a big issue with getting to a place like this is that it's not a direct flight. So coming from the likes of Ireland, you'd have to take two, maybe three flights if you were going over to Thailand. Okay, two to Bangkok. And I think cruise ships, it's a very interesting topic. Cruise ships got an awful lot of bad press at the start of this because they had the outbreaks on the ships. But in fairness, they're actually extremely safe. They have one of the best health protocols on board. But they've just got so much bad media attention at the start that people target them now. But it's like a plane crash. There are thousands in the sky all the time. There are thousands of cruise ships on the oceans. So I'd be looking at cruise lines as a great holiday. And river cruises particularly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So is there anything else that you think listeners should kind of look out for or coming up, or just anything else around travel?
I think for the most part I would be telling people that do your research, because very often all this time will have passed and we won't have actually done the research and done the planning. Sit down with your family and I would ask that they book with a local travel agent. Ideally, we'd love them to book with Platinum Travel, but we're such a small industry that any booking to any travel agent in this country is good for us. You know, that to support your local travel industry, we're from the outset. We've been here from the start. We have looked after clients from the start. So, you know, book with a reputable agency and do your research and look forward to it and enjoy looking forward to it. And if it gets moved, it gets moved. The end of the world. We'll look after it again.
I couldn't agree more. And I've always been saying it. And well before this pandemic, I was always encouraging people, book through a travel agent. We know now what happens when you don't go to the hairdresser, because we all need our hairdresser because they're the experts in looking after our hair. And you guys are the experts in looking after how we travel and where we should go and what we should do. So I think people have to really, really keep that in mind and keep your industry going. I think you're actually going to see a boom once we travel again, because I think people will really rely on your expertise even more and your knowledge before they travel, you know.
Well, that's it. And we are a service that, you know, we do think it's worth paying for. You pay for a service with solicitors and doctors and all that we are a service there to help you and inspire you.
Yeah, absolutely. And look after you. And you've looked after people so well. Kira, thank you so much for giving me your time today. I think I want to go now and book something. When I finish this, I'll be talking to you about my next great trip. But thanks so much again. And just people could find you on platinumtravel.ie.
Yeah. That's right, platinumtravel.ie. And from that main page, you can click into the inspirational evenings then to book whichever night you want to go along to. And thank you for all the support, Michelle, as always. It's always lovely to chat with you.
It's always great to chat to you too, Kira. Listen, take care. Thanks so much
you
for your
too.
Time.
Thanks, Michelle. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week, folks. Check out my website, thenoveltraveller.com, for any further news about travel as the landscape opens up and we prepare to travel again. You can follow me on social media, on Insta at The Novel Traveller, and on Facebook and Twitter too at The Novel Traveller. So until next week, ciao for now, and I'll leave you with Pat Coltrick and Oreo Sunrise.